So I wanted to go back for a minute to some of the stuff we discussed on Monday very briefly. I'm going to make a few quick observations. So I guess there was some pushback on Monday about the idea that the sentimental stuff shouldn't be protected, like stuff that only has sentimental value shouldn't be protected. So I just wanted to flesh out again the argument as to why it shouldn't be protected. So remember, first of all, it's machlokes and achronim. The Bach thought that you do pay the sentimental value, right, the subjective value that it's worth to the nizak, and it was the shach and the other achronim who disagreed with them. So just to point out, there is a machlokes about whether you pay kefi the objective value or the sentimental value that it holds for the nizak. On the assumption that you don't pay the sentimental value, and in a case where the object only has value that's sentimental or subjective, you wouldn't pay anything. So I thought you could make the further case and argue that there may not even be an iser lahazik in that case. And the reason for that is because it's not a protected entitlement. Meaning, the halacha gives you property rights in things that have productive worth. You could use them for productive purposes, they could create value. But something whose value is only sentimental is not protected under the halacha's theory of property entitlements. Mashal ma davar doma. So as like Americans, most of us have this like strong intuition that if you own land, you have a right to exclude somebody from trespassing, right? So if it's yours and no one else is allowed to use it in a harmless way. But in halacha, it seems pretty clear that a trespass is okay so long as it doesn't cause any harm to the property owner. And so by extension, you can say something here too, right? So yes, we have this intuition that we all have property rights in things that are merely sentimental, but it shouldn't be ruled out as a logical matter that the halacha doesn't recognize that as a protected entitlement.
I don't get that comparison at all. I don't know anything. What property rights and trespassing has anything to do with sentimental value?
My point is that it's an empirical question whether the halacha views this as a legitimate entitlement that's protected.
What's an entitlement? The right for it to exist? We're not talking about someone misusing your sentimental stuff. We're talking about someone destroying it.
Correct.
That's not just
destroying is a kind of misuse, right? So
I'm saying, but it's destroying it in a way that...
It's not the kind of property right that the halacha gives you ex ante. So, yes, the halacha gives you like certain rights and entitlements of nezikin for productive property, but something that has no productive worth. Its worth is purely sentimental. That's not a property right that the halacha protects.
Something you really believe in. Like you have this like painting of your father or your great great grandfather. It's like been passed on for generations, and like you're holding it really means a lot to you. And then I just come to your house and destroy it, and that means and then you think they're like, oh, that's okay. Allah has nothing to say about my actions.
Well, Allah has something to say about your actions. It says that they're not you haven't violated an iser, and there's no duty of compensation.
Wrong.
Correct. I'm saying yes, on the box view for sure. You've done something wrong and you have a duty to compensate. But if you don't hold like the box and you think that there's no compensation that's owed for something that has merely sentimental value, it may be the case that that's because it's not a protected entitlement, which implies that there's no iser to be mazikit either. There's no iser in terms of nezikin to be mazikit. Yes, there may be some sort of general iser of a havdil recha kamocha or something involved, but there's no iser nezikin in destroying it. That's the claim I was trying to make. And Leah, the connection to the trespass is that
how is this a copyright question and not a market evaluation question?
Ah, so a different you could talk about market evaluation. That's a different theory. But I'm saying on the distributive justice view that you're entitled to only certain kinds of goods.
Oh, okay.
Well,
I got it.
That's what I'm trying to explain. Well,
you're making a distributive justice.
Correct.
I mean, fine. This is not.
And I get it. It's unintuitive.
This is not what we're discussing. But then you would have to define what type of distributive justice model you have. Are you
making
a distributive justice? Like, I feel like whenever you use it, you do use it sort of like a Rawlsian sense. So, like, what is the minimum guarantee everyone should have in society?
Not the minimum.
But
what kinds of goods are protected entitlements?
True. But like, what determines that? Oh, the minimum freedoms you could be guaranteed.
So I don't think halacha is going to have a theory about that.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say.
Correct.
Exactly.
I don't think the halacha is going to have a theory about that, but it can say that property rights are limited to like productive goods.
Yeah, okay.
Right, not these things that are just purely sentimental.
Okay.
That's the case that I'm trying to make. So I think on Monday there was a lot of pushback. So this is my just explication of the idea. Does that sound?
It's still hard pressed to find something that has no value.
Okay, but fine. So, but by hypothesis, we're only dealing with things that have merely sentimental value.
Sure.
Okay. Now, the other way of looking at it is again the Cole. Cole, I know you're here. So like what Cole is arguing, that I can't be responsible. I as a mazik. Can't be responsible to organize my affairs around your private reasons. So I can't be held liable for the private worth that you attribute to your stuff. Right? That's a different way of going about it. I think on that argument, you could also make the claim that there's no iser as well. So not only is it the case I don't have to compensate you for the loss of your sentimental item, but I also don't violate an iser. For the same reason. In the same way that I can't be held financially liable for your private reasons, I can't be held halachically accountable in Isser for your private reasons. So you could make the same kind of argument.
But it's not a thing, it's not about the value here. Your argument is that you destroyed my thing. Even if it's valueless, like you should have some Isser, you're going to destroy something.
So not necessarily, because like I don't necessarily know that this thing contains any value to you, right? That's the problem. The fact that its value is purely subjective is consistent.
And therefore, I can just destroy your thing because I don't know. The fact that I don't know allows me to destroy it without any ether involved.
Right. The protected entitlements have to have some sort of like public reason, some sort of like worth that's like accessible to everyone. That would be an explication of this idea. Does that make sense to you guys?
A Bush-like idea of taking the chiyuv, the lack thereof, of tashlum, and basically saying, therefore there must be no iser.
So I'm not saying, in all these cases, I'm not saying because there's no chiyuv tashlum and there's no iser as well. I'm saying, given the general theory for why there's no chiyuv tashlumim, it's reasonable that theory will also claim that there's no iser involved. So it's not an inference from no tashlumim. It's an inference from the claim as to what underlies the non-tashlumim.
I don't see why you're committed to say that.
You're not committed to say it at all. You're not committed to say that.
You're attributed to us as you kind of are. But for the responsibility one, you're not committed to think that radical claim.
It's not a radical claim, but the question then is, well, why should you distinguish between, what?
It is a radical claim.
It is radical?
Yeah.
Why is it so radical?
Okay, I'm not a pretentionist.
Okay. Cool, and then I'll get to the last point. Yeah.
I was just going to say that I would have thought that the Isser Lahazik prohibits me doing things to other people's stuff that they don't want done, more or less. That it doesn't... And then there's a further question of what am I allowed to get compensation for if somebody does something to my stuff that I don't want.
Right.
So, on that theory, the Isser Lahazik would have nothing to do with whether the value of the object damage is public. That would be a separate question. The Isser Lahazik has to do with, and by the way, I think this is something that you would be friendly to, since your view of why Maytav is what's your view of why Maytav is what's used to compensate has to do with violation of someone's rights. I would have thought that intuition would be sort of friendly to the view that with the Isser Lahazik, to the view that there's something intrinsic about somebody's rights violations.
Yeah.
About the violation of someone's rights that gets compensation. That happens to me that in this case it's piggybacking off of a chiyuv tashlum, and that's true. But we don't just say that it's the publicity of the value that that I care about. We also just say that now there's like my property and my portrait of my family is that's something that it's usher for you to violate, whether or not I can claim compensation for its sentimental value.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. And again, I'm not saying that this kind of idea that private reasons can't be a basis for holding me liable must imply that there's no Isser as well. I'm merely saying that you can extend the argument to Isser, meaning in the same way that I can't be held financially liable for your private reasons, I can't be held halachically liable in terms of iser for your private reasons. But I get it. You're arguing, and this is flushing out what Isaac was saying also, right, Isaac? What's that?
I mean, that
there's the property right may be sufficient to block out. No one should intrude on your property or interfere with your property. But how much we're going to hold them liable for that we can't assess because of like the private-public dichotomy, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Cool. So the last theory. So those are the first two ways of explaining this about the subjective versus objective debate. And again, the last view, I think, would explicitly recognize that there is an iser. The last view says that, of course, it's wrong for me to deprive you of something that has subjective or sentimental value, but because there's no rigorous or fair process for determining its worth, since its worth is merely subjective, we can't hold you liable at all. All right, so there's just like a... There's a procedural issue with being able to determine the amount of the loss, and because we can't determine the amount of the loss, so you just don't pay anything at all. So on this view, I think the iser would be in place, but you would not be liable for tashlum. Okay? Does that sound good to everyone? Now I just want to point out, as I was talking to Donnie, we were talking about this during Seder, it would follow if there's no iser in some of these cases, then you wouldn't have the preemptive right to defend your property as well, right? So if like I see my family portraits over the fireplace and someone's about to come and destroy it, like arguably if there's no iser, I don't have a preemptive right to stop them, because it's only the iser which grants me that preemptive right based on what we saw in the beginning of the year, right? Okay, Isaac.
This last perspective, isn't it kind of in tension with if you want to try to give it?
So I think it's a fair point, but they're very different kinds of cases. So the Hezek Shein Onigar is just that it changes so much based off the circumstance. So you can't formulate a general rule for what the compensation should look like. Here the point is that even within the specific circumstance, as even when we zoom in to like this narrow dispute between the plaintiff and defendant, there's no objective way to calculate damages. There's no proper way to calculate damages. So one of them is more just about like how much this rule would fluctuate between cases, and so it depends on the case. That's the Hezek Shein Onigar argument. And this argument is saying, even within this case, there's no fair rule that we could construct. That's the distinction between the cases. But I see the tension that you're pointing out. Okay, so that's the first issue I wanted to cover. Any other comments on this, Noah?
Yeah, just clarifying. So there's in that view, in that theory, there's no iser because of that technicality?
No, so in that last view, there would be an iser.
There is an iser, but with respect to Donnie's not giving a bad
So I think in that case, you would have a right of self-defense, because of course there's going to be an iser. And if the reason why you're not financially liable is just because we can't determine the scope of liability, how much you have to pay, then of course the iser is still going to be in place. It's only on the first two views. So on the distributive justice view, I think, yes, there won't be an iser at all. Right? I think that's what Isaac was saying. The responsibility argument, the public responsibility for Nizak's private reasons, I think it's more of an open question. I was offering an argument why there may not be an iser. But Cole was and Yoni were saying we're offering reasons why there may be an iser. Okay, so let me just make two other comments that we spoke about yesterday, and then I'll move on. So, perhaps, I don't know if I was sufficiently clear yesterday about the Ma'arav Mintz versus the Chacham Tzvi this debate, and how they take a stance on the subjective valuation versus objective valuation. So, I thought that the Ma'arav Mintz, who held that if someone has an Esrog Mehudar, you only have to compensate him for the kiyum mitzvah value of an esrog, not the actual mehudar value of the esrog, which was destroyed based on that Gemara and Aruba. So I thought this was, in a sense, in a certain way of understanding it, it's a subjective view of tashlumei nezikin. Because we don't care about the market value of the esrog, Because once we know that the Nizak has this Esrog for the sole purpose of discharging his mitzvah obligation, so then his right to compensation is only within the narrow scope of mitzvah satisfaction. And so the idea is that, like, once we know the worth of this mitzvah to the Nizak, we won't allow for compensation beyond that worth, beyond that subjective worth or subjective purpose. That's why I'm interpreting this as a kind of a subjective view of Teshuvah Nezikin. So yeah, just one second. By contrast, the Chacham Tzvi, who thought that the Esro case is disanalogous to the Gemara Nayin Ches case, because in the Karban case, so the Karban has no market value because it can't be sold. Masha Inkin, the Esro, even though we know that your purpose in buying it or holding it is merely to satisfy the mitzvah obligation, it still retains a transactable market value. And so when you're mazik it, you pay the market value for it, not the narrow mitzvah purpose value. That was the Chacham Tzvi's argument. So I saw this as an objective way of construing Tashlumei Nezikin, because even though we know your subjective purposes, i.e. just to satisfy the mitzvah obligation, we're still going to structure the Tashlumen based off its more objective market value. So that's why I thought this was taking a stand on this objective-subjective question. Isaac Selter. And then we'll get Cole.
Yeah, that's right. I don't understand how the matter of instance we're only focusing on the Q mitzvah. Can't we assume that someone would, buy my Esther for Sukkot, but after the 7 days of Sukkot, I have an Esther to move that off with it?
Yeah. So he does say, to be fair to my Ramins, he does say that it retains some of its post-Pesach resale value. Mm-hmm. If you saw this line here, this line. So he actually does think that.
$2
Well, yeah, but this is its post-Yomtiv value. So remember, there's no real market for Esrogim anymore post.
Right.
It's lemon value at this point. So he does think that you retain that. But given that we know that your main purpose here is for satisfying the mitzvah, not for reselling it during or before Yom Tov, you don't get the market value at the time. Right, so imagine Esther was destroyed on Erev Sukkot, or 3 days before Sukkot, where you could get a fortune for it. He's saying you still just get like your kosher Esther value, not your Mahudra value. So he is sensitive to that, but I don't think that's so conceptually significant for our discussion. Let's get Cole and then Yoni. Cole.
There's a machlokas in the Gemara about whether the third that you're allowed to spend on an esrog is a third, as in it constitutes a third of the total value you spend, or whether it's a third. So it constitutes or a third of the total.
Yeah, milagav or milagav.
Yeah. So I think the Rav wants to explain this as.
All right, cut to the chase, Cole.
No. What I was going to ask is, might we distinguish between? Would a posting distinguish between if he thought that the mahudr was internal to the performance?
Yeah. Someone made this point. Who made this point on Monday?
Mm-hmm.
Well. No, about like, part of the key in mitzvah, Selter, you made that point, right?
Oh.
Yeah, cool. That's what Selter, the point that Selter made was that maybe if it's... That's the point that Selter made also. Maybe you could argue against my Ramitz if you think that like the key in mitzvah is different, idea asterisk mode. Although, the pushback is that the raya that the my Ramitz brings from Bava Kama, the Karban case, you might argue that a Karban... An ola that's brought as a shor should be substantively different from a carbon that's brought as an ola sa'o. So you have to see if that... Right, exactly. Yeah, Shkaya. Yoni, and then we'll go to the next case.
What Mara Mintz response to the Sefer Torah thing that the Chacham Tzvi gives?
Yeah, so what do you guys think the Mara Mintz is going to respond to the Chacham Tzvi Sefer Torah case? So Chacham Tzvi says, well, according to Mara Mintz, if I steal your beautiful Sefer Torah that's worth $100,000, if I destroy your Sefer Torah that's worth $100,000, so what, I only have to return like a Sefer Torah that's worth enough to be Yotzei Zayin Kisvi Lechem Es Hashir Azos? like, you know, a $10,000 used Sefer Torah or something, since it's all just like its mitzvah satisfaction value.
In a chanami.
Well, he might say in a chanami, unless he'll say that maybe there's like more value to holding a Sefer Torah than just its mitzvah value. No?
Resell it?
Or like maybe it's considered to be like a commodity in and of itself, as opposed to like an Esrog, which just has like a narrow yuntif.
Yeah.
Donnie,
yeah,
you gonna say that?
I feel like that there's a time limit to Esrog. That may be why it's focused on key moments.
Right, right.
Sefer Torah, you need it like constantly.
I was thinking of something along those lines. That,
you need it for a key mitzvah.
So you also, in Sefer Torah, you also have for the key mitzvah, but it has like a broader, more permanent market value. But the Esrog is just like this limited niche market for yuntif.
Right, the only value it has in the market is because it's from Yosei.
Okay, so think of it this way. Think of it this way. Remember, so Selter's point about the Maramins having also the post-stukas value you get to recoup? So you might just say, like, technically, look, I mean, the Sefer Torah just retains its value. It has, like, post-mitzvah value is the same as its pre-mitzvah value. So, like, there's nothing about, like, discharging the mitzvah. Its value is not just its mitzvah value. That's the... I think that would be the way to distinguish. Does that make sense, Isaac?
Yeah, I don't agree with that.
But it makes sense, right? I'm happy if it makes sense to you. And,
I think the statement that if the value is not in the mitzvah value,
right, right,
then the case is different. That statement is true.
Right. Okay, good. I think that's what I wanted to cover. Going back. I mean, one more quick hara before we move on. So I think Liad's right in his hara on the Dara Hanavim case, the wine, the crushing grapes case, that we said that according to the Migash and the Ar Sameach, so if I crush Liad's grapes, so Liad has the right to say that it's not a net improvement because he wasn't going to use them for wine production. Well?
Somebody's sinister about the way he says my name. Like, there's a cue of her.
Think so? It's,
yeah,
sounds like you have a guilty conscience, but
conscience.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. So if I crush Liad's grapes and Liad claims, so Liad could claim that it's not a net improvement. And therefore, he gets to recover like what he sees as the greater pre-crushing value, right? So I think there are two ways of... So that means that the Nizak has the discretion subjectively to determine whether he would prefer the grapes crushed or non-crushed, right? Which is more valuable to him. And then he gets to determine which kind of compensation he'll get, right? Does he get... Does he just keep the crushed grapes, and if it's a net improvement, then he doesn't get any tashlumei nezikin? Or does he get to claim that the pre-crushed grapes are more valuable to him, and then somehow he's going to collect the difference? But I just think Liad's right that, of course, if he wants to claim that the whole grapes are more valuable, then the nizak, the mazik, essentially gets to keep the created value by the crushing. Or in principle, he'd be entitled to it.
Yeah.
Right? That's what I would think, assuming it's recoverable. Well, I think not explicitly. But I think you could extract it from the Peches Nevela case, that the whole point is that the duty to mitigate the damages always falls upon the Nizak. So when he finds out that his grapes were crushed, he can't just be like, oh, and like all the wine that came out was lost. Mm-hmm. And now you compensate me for the pre-grape value. The reason why a Nizak has a duty to mitigate, you might say, is precisely for this reason, right? That if he doesn't mitigate his damages, then he bears the loss. So you might say that if he collects the nevela, i.e. the crushed grapes in this case, and says, gives it to the mazik and says, these are yours, compensate me for their pre-crushed value, maybe he has an argument. Okay? So that's just the point I wanted to make here. Now, stepping back, about this objective versus subjective debate that we've seen through several machloksim. I just want to point out that it seems very reasonable, and this is a point that Eitan made last week. If you take a subjective point of view for Tashlumei Nezikin, then it seems like Nezikin is primarily focused on the Nizak's loss. That's like the primary concern with Nezikin. And that's why, in evaluating the scope of damages, we look to their worth, to its worth for the Nizak, not its objective market value. I think that's correct. I think the other direction is not true. I think it's not the case that if you take an objective view of evaluating Nezek, that it means that we don't care about the Nizak's loss. You might say, yes, we care about the Nizak's loss, but it's got to be fair to like the public reasons that motivate the Mazik's actions. Right? And since the Mazik can't peer into the Nizak's way of purposing his own property, so we have to have some objective value, objective way of evaluating it. So I don't think, if you hold that the evaluations are more objective, I think it's still an open question. But if we find that we typically care about the subjective use of the Nizak, then it seems like Nezikin begins with the loss of the Nizak. And then we figure out how to compensate him.
What do you mean by the compensation begins with what the Nizak
lost? I mean, we want to figure out what did you lose, and like how could we correct your loss.
And then what? Is there another part after the start, or is it just what the Nizak lost?
Well, we're imposing liability on the Mazik, right? Usually we impose liability on the Mazik. So there are different ways of understanding why we impose liability on him. But the point is that if you think that Tashlumei Nezikin begins with evaluating how the Nizak sees his loss, rather than from like a more objective point of view as to what his loss was, then it seems like one of the purposes of Nezikin is to compensate victims for the losses they suffer. Right? As opposed to, let's say, punishing tortfeasors for their wrongdoing. Right, one's like a theory that begins with the wrongdoing of the Mazik, and one's a theory that begins with the loss of the Nizak.
So you can't shake the subjectivity. You can't shake that as being part of the evaluation.
What do you mean? I'm just saying that how you evaluate it, how you want to evaluate Nezikin, may take a stand on this broader question as to what role compensation is playing in the general system of torts, of Nezikin. That's the point that I'm making. Is that clear to everyone, or? Yeah? Should I open a window?
No, I didn't get it. What do you mean, what role is it playing?
Eitan, you want to take a stab at it, since it's your hero?
Yeah, sure. What's your exact question about this?
My question is, it seems like you're trying to distinguish between whether you start with the subjectivity or whether you start with the objective definition, and somehow that has some sort of nafkamina legabe, what the tashlumin means for this definition of Nezikin.
What Rabbi Tumash kind of say is that in the case of the, when you're looking at the subjective approach.
I got smicha finally.
I'm not a theory, you're 10 years older than me. It's anyway, the sub.
You are old.
You even have a beard.
Yeah. Okay, go on, Aza.
When we're looking at the subjective approach, it just makes sense that the emphasis on the Nizak is where the focus of determining what the value is. Meaning that when we're trying to set a value of how much Nezik occurred, or to set what's a proper restoration for the damage that happened, looking at the Nizak and seeing how much he lost is just the obvious start of where you would go. However, what Rabbi Tumar is trying to say is that the opposite is actually not true. Which is something I said on Sunday, but he decided on his own. I said that I thought it was like, oh, you could work the exact same way, but the fact that the Mazik is the emphasis on, in the case where we're looking at the objective, is not the case because of what we're trying to say now, that what's the main exact point about the Mazik? Not meaning we're saying that it's not because of,
it's not that we don't take subjectivity.
It's just there are other forces that are
wrong. Right. Yeah. Right. So my point is, see, there are two, we have like, there's this background question, it's like, what's Nezikin for? Right? It's to, just think of it in this very crude way. Is it to punish wrongdoers, or is it to compensate victims? Right? Just think of it in that very crude dichotomy. And I'm saying, maybe, now, so that's a background question. Then in our sugya, we had this more narrow question as to how do we evaluate the amount to be paid? Do we evaluate it based off how much this thing was worth to the victim? Or do we evaluate it based off, on some, based off a more objective metric about how much was its market worth? You see that, Yoni?
Yeah.
And so I'm saying, if you think that we're evaluating it based off the victim's, how much was worth to the victim, that implies that the duty to compensate is about restoring the victim's loss. That's how we begin with his subjective valuation. You see that? But I'm saying the other way is not the case. Meaning, if we take an objective standard for compensation, that need not imply that it's because we just are worried about punishing for wrongdoing. Right? You could still say it's about compensating him for his loss. Just the only fair way to do that is by taking an objective view about what his loss actually is. Okay? All right. Clear to everyone? Okay, so let's get to the main course. So we began talking about, is there liability for Sheves and Ripoy? What's that, Yona? Yoni? Jonah? Sorry, Jonah. So a Sheves and Ripoy. So the question is there Sheves and Ripoy for a behema? So Avram, if I asked you, should there be Sheves and Ripoy for a behema, what would you say?
There is not?
That's what it says. Who cares what it says on the board? So you find some guy from B'nai Brak and you put him on the board and I'm like, I understand.
I thought I said yesterday that included in payment is sort of Sheves.
Yesterday was Mada Day. Okay, so this is an open question, correct? Why, I mean, to you guys, is it intuitive that there should be liability for Sheves and Ripoy for a behema? Eitan?
Yeah, I would say that when you're destroying someone's property and that animal was financially helping out another person, that there totally should be restoration
sure.
for that money loss.
That's my intuition also, right? I mean, look, it's a kind of harm suffered by the plaintiff, right? I mean, so we saw already in Rashi and Tosos' reading above Metziat Tzadites that you can be liable for lost profits. Again, so it depends exactly how you read that Tosos and Nesivos, but in principle, it seems like the merchant should be compensated for his market day loss, right? What he could have made off having this commodity. And you would think that, gee, Sheves for behema is exactly analogous to that, right? It's the loss of profits that the Nizak suffers by not being able to put the animal to productive use. So it seems like a natural extension of the Rashi Tosos reading above Metziat Tzadites just generalized to all cases of Nezikin. So I think that's the argument for Sheves behema. Of course you should be liable. Because that's a kind of like lost profit in the same sense that Rashi and Tosos want to compensate you in the merchant case of a Metziat Tzadites. Jonah.
Just obviously slightly incorporating our conversation from yesterday, but I would think maybe that there's more of a chance that I'd be hired for Ripoy than Sheves.
Oh, good. So let's get to Ripoy. What's the argument for Ripoy?
Ripoy is the fact that like I might most probably have to go to a veterinarian to get my animal.
Okay, so I don't care about your veterinarian. So what's the argument for Ripoy?
You're the one who, I mean, put it in this position. So you injure my animals, therefore you should
bring it back. Part of the human talking.
Yeah, so yeah, good. So it's part of the chiyuv l'takein. Right? We saw already the Shach and the Rambam think that the duty is l'takein as hanezek. And so you think that Ripoy is just the live animal equivalent of tikkun for a kli. I destroy your house, your window, even talking. I harm your animal, I'm chiyuv talking. Gee, what's tikkun for an animal? It's tashlumei ripui. So I think when you think of ripui and sheves in these terms, it's almost like, how could you justify the position that there wouldn't be ripui and sheves for a behemoth?
I wonder if we'll get to this later, but maybe bring it up now. The Chazon Ish's argument that it's inherent in a behemoth the ability to be merape itself.
Yeah, we'll get to the Chazon Ish.
That could possibly be addressing this question.
He's trying to address this question. We'll see if it addresses it. I don't think it addresses. I mean, he's trying to answer this question for sure, right? Because that's a distinction between kli.
Yeah.
But right now I'm just trying to motivate the argument, of course, why I'm trying to motivate the argument why there should be Ripoy and Sheves for Bema. Let's take Isaac and then Noah. Yeah, Cole, we'll get to you in a minute. I'm just going to take Isaac and...
Why is Sheves not
part of the Chiyuv
HaTakin? Why would Sheves be the responsibility of Chiyuv HaTakin?
It's not. Sheves is not part of the Chiyuv HaTakin. Ripoy. Sheves, I think, is motivated by the Rashi Tosos reading of the Gemara in Sadi Tespa Mitzia, that you reimburse him for the profits he would have made on the market day, right? So I have two separate motivations, but my point is that a ripoy and sheves should fall into the general principles of liability for Nezikin. So this is what leads me to think that clearly the reason why we have this concept of ein sheves and ripoy for behema, which you saw floating around in the different formulations in the acronym here, is really because they're just contained within Tashlumei Nezikin, right? So, yes, the reasons motivating a liability for Ripoy and Sheves are so great that the answer really is that they're there, right? They're just subsumed under the Tashlumei Nezikin of a behema. That's what I was trying to motivate on Monday. But Cole, you had a question, then I'll go on.
Yeah.
Let me make you louder here. So,
I'm sorry.
Go.
I really like that. It's clean, but now I kind of want to know why the halacha, why the Gemara distinguishes five categories for an adam, and we had to say a lot of lumdis to get ripui and sheves built into the tashlumei nezikin. So I guess I would want to move to a question here. Future chabura, like why we divide with an adam and unite.
Yeah, this is Isaac's question. Isaac, this is your question on Monday. This is Isaac's question on Monday. So why exactly are they distinguished, right? So I thought that's what the Tosvos and the Tur and the Sma were all getting at. So Cole, I'll answer that in a second. Let me just build up the case that I'm building, and I think along the way I'll answer your question. So again, so it seems like Ripoy and Sheves are really built into Nezek of Behema. That's the only way to make sense of this problem. So how did we show this? So on Monday I tried to show this based on three observations. So the first is I tried to show that in Nizke Adam, when we have Tashlumin of Chamisha Dvarim, so the Nezek does not include the Ripoy and Sheves. That was the first point I tried to show, right? So for an Adam, Dafka, the point is that Nezek, the Tashlumei Nezikin, doesn't include the costs of healing and the lost wages for lost work. Right? Everyone remembers that for Monday?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Isn't that obvious?
Yeah, I mean, it's not so obvious. I mean, like, it's obvious once you analyze the dinim carefully. And it's obvious once you look at like certain acronym. It's not totally obvious according to everyone.
You just said that for the Nezek for Adam, the main Nezek doesn't include the Ripoy and Sheves.
Yeah, that's pretty clear. Okay. Yeah, here's the Pesach Choshen's formulation. It's not so clear when you read the Gemara. But here's the acronym's formulation. So Pasha Cheshumas and Nezek Hukimo Hukama Shava Limkor La Achar She Yisrape Shehare Mishalim Hotzoas Ripoy. Right? Clearly the difference in market value that you pay under Nezek does not include Ripoy, for otherwise there would be an overlap in the account. right? And the same thing for Sheves. Pisay Choshen says explicitly, Shekvar Nasan lo b'chlal ha-nezek ma'asha Sheves pachos b'glal chisaron yada. That when we calculate the bidul malacha of Sheves, it's got to be external to what you're paying in, you're paying under under the difference in market value of Nezikin. Okay, that was the first point I made. That was the first point I made on Monday. The second point I made on Monday to motivate this idea is that when the Achronim try to explain why... Okay, so related to this idea again is that when we calculate Nezek for a behema, so we would calculate it to include Tashlume Ripoy and Sheves. Right? So if an animal gets injured, so when you calculate the difference in the Nezikin, you would calculate it from the moment of its injury. How much less is it worth relative to its pre-injury worth? And that's going to include, presumably the market's going to factor in a difference in value associated with the cost of repair, the cost of healing, and some sort of a difference in value based off the lost wages or the loss of earnings that this animal could have made you. Right? So for example, if I'm trying to sell a car to an Uber driver, so if it's like a little broken and he's not going to be able to use it for like 30 days, he'll pay a little less for that car than he would pay for a car that's like brand new that he'll be able to use right away. Right? Does everybody see that? So the point is that the Sheves and Ripoy are going to be factored into the Nezek value. So then Kol and Isaac say, well, how come the Chatchila... we don't just do that for Adam as well. Why do we have this distinction in accounting? So the answer there, this is pointed out by all the Achronim, by the Rishonim. This is the formulation of the Tur, and Tosis and Gittin, and we'll see it's also the Rosh and Mordechai, that it just has to do with some empirical assumption about the relative efficiency of markets in humans versus markets in animals. That markets and humans are not sufficiently efficient to account for the difference in Sheves and replay value. Markets and animals are. So is that idea clear to everybody? Does anybody want to say something about that empirical assumption?
Can you clarify what it means, the market value of humans? Isn't it like a thing that humans aren't Omei and Limkor and that like they don't have market value philosophy?
Well, they're not Omei and Limkor.
So what market value
I thought that was the point.
Yeah.
Not even look, I can't like sell myself just like found as a slave and you value how much I'm worth and now I'm sold.
So you may not,
what is the market value of a human?
It's your employment worth.
But it's not, because we pay you. Sheves covers employment worth. If you get injured and you miss out on employment worth, then that gets compensated via Sheves. So it seems like it's imperative.
It's not. So it's like how much would you have made
worth if it were sold into servitude?
It's not always servitude. You'll see that for now. I put this thing up earlier. It's really narrowly tailored to your profession.
Isn't it redundant on Sheves? What's the difference between Sheves and Sheves? Isn't Sheves
when
you get compensated for not being able to work?
No, for your recovery time.
Right. Sheves is the lost days, the days of labor that you lost because of your work.
Okay, but let's assume you break my leg, and it's going to heal fine eventually. By the time it is assessment, so Sheves is not.
So
Sheves is
not. No, there's no Nezek in that case.
Jonah, do you have a marker?
If you're going to fully heal, then yes.
Correct. Exactly. Correct. Correct. Thank you. So the way you conceive this is like, so here's a time, right? So suppose you're injured over here, and here you get healed. So suppose your earning potential here is $250,000 a year. Okay. Your earning potential here is, let's say, $500,000 a year.
Factory jobs is much better.
Well,
factory jobs is
much
better.
Well, these aren't. I mean, so it's not just factory. It depends. Whatever.
Some people are, but physical ailments.
Right.
is a surgeon.
True. So how's this going to work? So
how should people with it work?
And let's say over here, right? So your earning potential is really just like $50,000 a year. Okay. Meaning, before you recover, you can only make $50,000 a year. All right?
Yeah.
So, Shevet, so the difference in Nezek is the difference between 250 and 500.
So you get paid 250
for that. Shevet is not 400, right? The Shevet is not 450. The Nezek is not $450,000 per year. Shevet is the difference between the post-recovery and pre-injury.
But this also assumes that the actual measure per year is like your return's value.
Well, let's say you just multiply this for how many years you court.
I thought Shevet is in the middle.
So Nezek. Did I say Shevet?
Yeah.
Sorry, Nezek. Nezek is the difference between 250 and 500.
So in this case, you get 250
per year
times 500 per year if you're going to work.
Exactly.
Plus, another whatever it
is. So this is the Nezek, exactly. So then the Shevet now is the lost wages that you would have relative to your new, your post-recovery projected earnings.
Because this is the post-recovery.
Yeah, because otherwise it would be included in Nezek.
So you got, yeah, so you have 250 times X plus 200.
Plus,
Healed
minus injury.
Plus 200 times.
Right, plus like the lost wages at this rate for the interim.
Yeah, plus 200 times however long you were.
Correct, that's Shevet. Shevet is like this amount at this rate post, right?
Okay,
fine. That rate minus. Wage.
And repoy is just how much it costs to get you from injured to healed for the doctor's bills.
Got it.
So you see, the point is that Nezek is really all about this area. And then repoy and Shevet are kind of like supposed to be independent of it.
Yeah, so how much.
But for an animal, this is all for an adam. For an animal, we'd have this different chart. That's all we care about is the injury, pre and post injury. And so you have a timeline that goes like this. And so suppose the animal is worth, I don't know, $50,000 here. Wow.
That is one.
That's a nice animal.
That's a nice cow.
And,
that's a racing horse.
The animal's worth
$10,000 an hour for free dinner. That's a good horse.
The animal's worth $25,000 here. So the idea is that the post value and the pre value is supposed to incorporate like all the Shevet and repoy costs as well, because the amount that someone's going to pay for the injured thing is somehow the markets are efficient enough that like this difference captures what's not captured here for another. So you say, gee, why is that the case? And then it's clear from the Rishonim. So the Rishonim say two things. The first thing is just that. A person is eno omed li mafer, hilkach lo afkes mi kaspe, meaning since like there aren't like the markets for humans aren't fine grained enough to capture like the diminution in value based off a few lost days of work and a few medical bills. Right?
Yeah.
That's the first way of explaining it. The Rush has a nice variation on this idea, and it seems that the Tur has this, Tosos has this, Mordechai has this in Perek Chovel. You can see here, Chaim Pirush Rabbeinu Meir, Kedivei Rabbeinu Chaim. Rabbi Chaim Parizo Meir, Delo Damu, Delo Shayach Shevet Ela BaAdam, Deshifto Lo Habe Bechlal HaNezek. Because for an Adam, Shevet is not Bechlal Nezek. Dimiyad Kishehuzak Shamanos So Kama Dama Pchusim. Now I think this is going on an animal. Because for an animal, the moment he's damaged, we figure out the difference in his value. Kama Dama Pchusim Limkor. Adam deshifto lo have bechlal nezek, deshevet lo pichsu damov kolkach. The market value of a person won't be diminished because of a few days of lost labor. Aval shor pshita deshevet bechlal nezeku, v'chayiv l'shalim shevet l'shor. Everybody see that?
Why is that true?
What? Why
is it true?
Why are these true? So. Here's another point that it's a separate consideration, although it may be related. Maybe this helps. So the Rush says that he gives this kind of idea that Tosafos has. The Rush is going to say it right. The Ode, the Adam, Dam of Yekarim. It's like a person is like, you pay so much for him that like the delta the delta difference of medical costs and lost wages, like, doesn't really factor into the market costs. I think there's something psychologically true about this, right? It's like, once you're paying so much money for something, so like a few extra costs related to medical bills and lost days of wages, like, don't factor into your, don't factor into the pricing mechanisms. So I think that's what the rush is getting at. Maybe that's like a general explanation for why the markets and persons are less efficient at incorporating Chevis and Revoy. Not that they have to be calculated. And that's why justice requires that they're calculated separately. What do you think, Isaac? Does that help or?
No, not really. I mean, that really makes sense. Like, you're able to do a very simple calculation on a person's worth.
Well, again, the point is that a doctor with a week of vacation and a doctor with 2 weeks of vacation might get the same salary. Right? Like, when I hire my babysitter, like, I don't, you know, I'll give her a week, I'll give her 2 weeks, like, we can negotiate that, but that's not really going to factor into, that's not going to factor into how much I pay her. I think that's the argument that the Rush and Tosis are getting at. Whereas, like, when you're buying, like, a Behema or something, or a Klee, so, you want, its value is, like, fully determined by, like, the amount of labor you could exploit it for.
It's not really true, though.
Well,
it's not really true, though, by, like, on sports players. Like, if we're going to injure for, like, the first few
right,
weeks, like,
right.
you're definitely less value.
Yeah. I don't know. But yeah, is that true for, like, a few days worth? And,
a few days, but definitely, like, at a certain point, yeah. For sure.
Right, at a certain point, yes.
Like your trade value.
Right. At a certain point, at a certain point, yes. But what about before you reach that point? So you might say there's a certain threshold where...
I tell you all, it's like an animal, but I'm down. In a day,
right.
You're going to care so much, you're going to catch your
Well, they're trying to say, therefore, like, this difference is enough to explain, like, a difference in the general rule about how we're going to approach them.
But there's no difference. The point is that for such a small difference, you won't care for an animal or a person, and for a large difference, you will care for an animal and for a person. Mm.
And you don't think that there's a difference about where the cutoff line is between animals and humans? We have to see. I mean, I don't think it's unreasonable. I think you have to look at empirical data about, like, how much people spend on, like, really expensive things and whether that sort of, that makes them less sensitive to small, like, fluctuations in use. So, yeah, Cole, did that answer your question? That assumes that I have, like, some privileged information about where your private thoughts are going, Cole.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm the sentimental view of the scene, so I was hoping.
Yeah. All right, think it out, and then you can send out an email to the group again. It's been a while since we've had a group email from you. So, yeah, Noah, and then I'll move on.
Okay, the question, I guess, an observation. Okay. My question is, is it possible to read this as just that like Tosfos and Mordechai are suggesting that, like, the main functionality of animals is
productive.
Okay, yeah. And that's science fiction. So, like, if there were to be a market for people, so then the same thing would be true as well.
Yeah. So Isaac, I mean, Isaac's not going to like that. Noah's point.
If the point of Tosfos of Mordechai is just that animals have a production value and that's the most important function.
That they're solely, like, their price is solely determined by their productivity.
Right. So then
that's what Isaac's gonna say.
Humans are worth measured down the year times the number of years you've been working for.
Right. So then my second point is, like,
but a Kantian will say that, like, of course a human's never his value is not fully determined by his productivity. Right, there are all these like intangible things that come along with like humans.
Market value.
What?
Like
value. No, even like their market value is not fully determined. Like, you know, having this guy in the office is just like a good guy to have around. It's good. Yeah, it's good for like the prestige of the institution.
It's all going to boil down to the bottom line. Like having someone that's good for the office, like will make our colleagues feel more productive. And so, like,
but it's not about his productive. But it's not about his productive. It's not. It's a very broad sense of product production, you know. But the point is that that's not going to be captured.
If someone, like, I don't know, becomes like a really happy guy, or like a really grumpy looking guy, like tired and
I mean, obviously, it raises a really interesting question. Like, so assume that the empirical assumptions about the markets are not correct. So that does that like significantly change how we want to calculate Chavez and Reboy for Behemoth versus Adam?
Seemingly.
What?
Seemingly,
right? Yeah, I mean, like, what's primary here? Like the distinction in din, and this is like just like trying to give an explanation for it, or like no, the reasons are meant to determine the halacha underneath it. What?
The halachic man discussion over here.
So, anyways, so I think there are two separate reasons given. One of them is about the difference in market efficiencies between Adam and Behemoth. Then this rush thing, it has to do with Oda Adam Dama Yakarin, that the cost of human labor is so high that the relative depreciation based on Shevis and Ripoy is insignificant. And that's why when we're talking about justice and your duty to compensate for losses, we have to calculate Shevis and Ripoy differently, independent of Nazikin for an Adam. Do you see that? And then Isaac's going to say, oh, well, same thing for if you have, like, a really expensive asset, right? I mean, like, if you have, like, a really fancy car or something, or, like, a very exotic animal that's going to win the Westminster dog competition or something. Well? Whatever, yeah. So then you might say that the same rule would apply that you calculate Shabbos and Reboy separately. No, yeah.
Yeah, my just last thing. How do we know, like, from like a historical perspective, that was the model for like salary, the modern version of salary is very different.
Well, that's what they're talking. We're trying to talk about Kama Adam is Roy Mimacher Bashuk and stuff like that. That's definitely the way to calculate Nazikin.
Right, but I'm saying how do we know what like general compensation was for?
It seems like there are rates for like different human.
Were people paid based off? Were people paid by day, by week, by month? Definitely weren't paid by quarter.
Yeah, but something like that. But that's how you calculate it. See how much the guy, you know, would have been paid for his labor for the year.
Okay.
Right. If you look earlier in the Makoro sheet, I gave you like some discussions about how narrowly tailored the compensation should be. So here's the Mishkoshen, for example, and Yudalef Tess. So for an Adam she'ein lo omenos, then your shaman also ke'evet omer limacher b'shuk. Kama ha'yeshava kodem ha'chavala v'kama shava la'achar mikain. Again, la'achar mikain is after the recovery. V'ha'hefresh hu ha'nezek she'chayev l'shalim lo. Bamed v'ramur v'adam she'ein lo omenos. Al mishi yesh lo omenos, shamin kama pachas peches evet ha'nimkar v'omenos shelo. Right, to see like how much a person is sold as a laborer in that discipline. Right? So I wouldn't be thrown off by the term Eved. I would say it's, you know, like a modern employee is kind of like a Gemara's Day Eved. Right?
It's very practical. So if you lower someone's labor pregnancy, that would also be included in Eved?
Yeah, I would think so. Correct, because then you'd multiply this by fewer years.
But how do you determine that life expectancy? Like,
you pull on the actuaries.
Like, Slaka would recognize that? Like, I feel like, at least for this.
Is that like a halachic man question? Like,
no.
An actuary given over at Sinai?
No, what I'm saying is like that's something that can't be determined.
Well, you have the, you know, you do the best you can. You have the. But the actuaries, if Yakir was here, you could probably give us a number.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. Like, I guess maybe that's a broader question of all of this. Like, when is this payment being made? Like in what capacity? Like, is this like we're just assuming how many years he's going to be working for, and then that's a one-time payment,
right?
Or every year? Or
no, I think it's the number of years that he's. So like I like the hospital says, how much would you? We tell the hospital how much would you give a surgeon a life contract?
A life contract.
Okay. Yeah. That's the difference in Dhamma. Yeah. So, you know, the Gemara always talks about Dayanim and Hafti Bikim Bishuma. You know, and like, kind of you learn this stuff, and you're like, why, what's that? Who cares about the Shuma? But once you deal with this stuff, you realize that's like the most important thing. Like, you always have to figure out, like, what the delta in value is, or like the real amount of damages. And you need some sort of framework for that.
Yeah.
And yeah, so here you'd have to call in the actuaries or whatever. Okay. So the first thing that seems to show this idea that really the Rish Evis and Ripoy for Behema is this whole line of arguments that Shevis and Ripoy are calculated separately by Adam because they're not Bechal Nezek. And therefore for Behema, the assumption is that Shevis and Ripoy are included in the delta in the market value, which is the Nezikin. So, the clearest raya of this view is the Machaneh Ephraim in Hilchos Tchiras Simen Chaf. He says explicitly that whenever you're not going to pay Nezikin for Behema, you'll have to pay out explicitly the Tashlumei Sheves. Because in this clear case, the Nezikin is not incorporating the difference in value of Nezek. So whenever there's no Nezek, you're going to explicitly have to pay Tashlumei Sheves. That's what he says also explicitly.
It's a weird way of saying it.
Well,
why not just say it's the Nezek?
Well, because I think, so this is the next point I'm going to make. And hold off 1 second. So the Machaneh Ephraim says explicitly, according to this, Im sagar behemto shel chaver bitlum im lacha dechayev. So there's no change in value to the item. You just lock it up. I put a lock on your car, or I put a lock on your store so that you can't use it for the day. So there's no tashlumei nezek. There's no like damage. But I would pay the sheves. I would pay the expected profits that you were going to make on that day. Yoni.
Well, last week, or 2 days ago, you argued that he was basing himself the part about doing the garment was relating to the Mordechai.
Yeah.
But the Mordechai...
Here, I don't think he's...
His whole argument is based on like Dina Degarme throughout, but then he disagrees explicitly with the second half about the Behemoth.
This part.
Yeah, and then Mordechai explicitly says that you're not fine.
Yeah, we'll talk about the Mordechai in a second.
No, but I'm saying, so then what...
I just think this is like a similar conception that Sheves and Ripoy are kind of like Garmi, that they're not, they don't arise directly. The results of the harm, they're not like the harm itself. And that's the same paradigm you see in the Mordechai.
The whole point of Mordechai is like that you're not high.
So we'll get to the Mordechai. We'll look at the Mordechai and then you'll tell me if you think it's that in tension with this. Okay. Now, to answer Isaac's question, so everybody see Isaac, say your question again.
Why not just say it's in
the... So Isaac's making a very interesting point here, right? He's saying, so grant that there's no Nezikin. So we would. He's not saying that. Because you can't grant that there's no Nezikin and say there's Nezikin. So let's say there's no, like, material harm that was sustained. So there are two ways now to calculate the Sheves. You could calculate Sheves as just lost profits for the day, or lost profits for however many days you lost use, or you could calculate the Nezek based off delta in the market value.
For an efficient market.
But since we know that markets are not efficient,
the whole argument is that the reason why you can incorporate everything into Nezek is because animal markets are efficient.
More efficient. They're more efficient. Yeah. They're more efficient.
Either way, they're efficient enough that you're allowed to incorporate them.
Yes. Good. So they're efficient enough that you're allowed to incorporate them when you have Tashlumei Nezikin, but it's a separate question when you don't have Nezikin. What's the proper way to calculate Sheves? Do you want to calculate Sheves as by, well, let's figure out how much would the store, how much would the Uber driver have made if he had access to his car? Or do you say that let's ask an Uber driver how much he would pay for this car, knowing that he can't use it for 4 days. Right? And those may be different values. Does everybody see that? So the question then is, well, which one of these is the right way to calculate Sheves when there's no, or when prima facie there's no Nezek? Prima facie no Nezek, because on this argument there is Nezek. The Nezek is just the difference in value based on the loss of use. Right? So notice the Machane Ephraim takes a stand, and he says the way it works is that, look, usually Sheves is embedded within Nezek. But if there's no Nezek, then the Sheves has a resurrection. Right? And it comes back as its own entity.
If there's no Nezek.
Right? So again, the case is like I just lock you out of your store for a day. Or like I take away your car keys so you can't drive for Uber for the day. So you didn't sustain any material harm, any material damage, but you have loss of use. So is loss of use calculated as a difference in the market value as a kind of Nezek? Or is it calculated distinctly as Sheves? So you see there are two different ways of understanding, these are two different ways of making sense of the argument that Sheves is typically Bechal Mezikin. You see that? If you take the Machane Ephraim's view, what does it sound like? Avram, what does it sound like? Fair enough? Ben, what does it sound like with respect to this Chakira about whether Sheves is Bechal Mezikin? If you take the Machane Ephraim view. Jonah.
Meaning that Sheves is relevant when it's relevant. In other words, if it's like, let's say, on the trade block, and therefore it's not working right now, then there's no damage Sheves. But if it is currently working for me, and then you damage it, then I should be compensated for the fact that it can't work for me tomorrow.
Meaning what? No, he is saying that. Of course he's saying you're compensated for Sheves. But why does he choose the Sheves rule rather than the delta market, rather than subsuming Sheves under Nezikin, even in the case where there's no material Nezek? Noah.
Isn't it because he conceptualizes Nezek as more narrowly as loss of market value, and therefore anything external to that cannot be Nezek by definition?
Yes and no, because usually
loss market value for this.
Right. So he's trying to say, I think, usually, but this is very close to what you're saying, and that is that it's like normally when there's Tashlumi Nezikin, it makes sense to wrap Sheves into Nezikin. But all we're doing in that case is more just like it's like an efficient way of calculating things. But Sheves always exists as this independent chiyuv.
So it's inefficient way of calculating it.
What?
Inefficient way of calculating it.
Yeah, well, it's imprecise.
Okay.
But once we have Tashlumi Nezikin, yes, maybe it's a little less precise, but we wrap Sheves into Tashlumi Nezikin. But there still is a separate category of Sheves for Behema. That's the critical point.
Not only less precise, it's also harder to do.
To wrap it in?
Yeah. Like we have to come up with this like theoretical case of like someone who would buy an animal to use.
Or maybe there's a market for it.
Either way, it's like way easier to calculate the lost profits that the animal can do each day. Just look at the last 10 days that the animal worked and see how much profits it came from. Way simpler.
So maybe, but the question is
chain, rolling,
no, right, that's
production over the last.
Fair. So maybe it's all just about simplicity. So when you're not calculating this, so we just fall back to this. Like, when you're not calculating Nezek at all, because there's no material harm, so we just calculate the Sheves out separately.
I think my question, like, is motivating a stronger view that you should always be calculating Sheves separately and not wrapping up the Nezek.
Okay, this is your consistent argument. You're just denying the halacha.
Right.
So it's not an anti-halachic man argument. It's like an anti-halacha argument. Right, you're just not. You're not treating the demon seriously.
I think my first argument was an anti-halacha.
You like the other Baal Batim in England. It's like, why do we do it this way when we can do it the way the lawyers do it?
We're going there very soon.
So that's one. So this is the Machane Ephraim's theory. So the point that I'm perseverating on is that the Machane Ephraim clearly holds that Sheves for Behemoth is a distinct Machayev, because that usually it's wrapped within Nezek. In cases where there's no Nezek, it's resurrected as its own din once again. The other Achronim disagree, and you can see this in the Shud Beis Ephraim in Choshen Mishra Siman Hei. So Beis Ephraim is Ephraim Zalman Margulies, one of the great 18th century Polish Achronim. So he has a similar view that there's going to be, when there's no Nezek, there is going to be Tashlume Sheves for a Behema. So you can look at the piece here, it's, he has a bit of an Arifas. And here's the critical point. It says...
Is this the one quoted by...
Pesach Hoshen? Yeah, so in the new source sheet I have it separately. There's a lot of interesting stuff to unpack there.
Okay.
So he says, the way you calculate Sheves is this way. So he talks about the same case as the Machane Ephraim, so where you lock somebody out of their store, or you deprive somebody of use of their animal. The Mechayev L'shalim HaPeches Shenifchisa Im Hayarotza L'machra Ba'odena Ne'ula L'zman Sheyotziena Zeh Mimasker Shehizgira V'gam Zeh B'chlal HaNezek. The way you calculate Sheves for locking somebody out of their store, or like taking away their Uber keys, is the difference in market value. How much less would somebody pay for this item knowing that they can't use it for several days? So it sounds like, contra the Machane Ephraim, he wants to say that even when all there is to pay is lost use of Sheves Behema, it's structured as a Nezek and the difference in the market value that arises because of it. So there never is an independent Sheves in the Adam sense for a Behema. It's always wrapped into Nezikin, and that's why even when you calculate it as like the Sheves Shevinezek, it has to be calculated in the general Nezek way. Even though all you're calculating is for the difference in value because of loss use. So you see that there are two different methods for trying to calculate this. You might say that at bottom, again, there are a few ways of trying to explain this, you might say that at bottom it's machlokes about whether there truly is Sheves for a Behema, or whether it has to be snuck in through the back door of a difference in market value.
Why wouldn't there be?
What?
Why wouldn't there be
what?
Sheves for a Behema.
I mean, why would it have to be snuck in through the back door of a difference in market value? Or something that, like, it's a kind of grumma. The difference in market value is the direct result of the harm of the mazik, or like the lost profits are a grumma of that. And so you might say the base of Ephraim, therefore, in order to get it as Nezek Yashar, has to wrap it into Nezek, whereas the Machane Ephraim is willing to see even this as a direct result of the mazik's actions. So you might say they're like actually arguing whether this is like a less directly related to the mazik's actions than the market value difference. I think it's one way of trying to make sense of it.
There's also no source for Sheva, for animals.
Yeah, there's no makar.
This is based on our consistently that there's no conflict with Sheva, and that what we're showing are trying to. And the reason I try to argue there is Sheva, it's still included within the
right.
Nezek.
Right, so it's like
there's no explicit source that there's a few Sheva independently.
Right. So you might say it's a kind of Occam's razor, like, you know, don't postulate more entities than are necessary. So if we're going to postulate some sort of Sheves or Behema, just keep it within Nezek, within the general Nezek methodology. Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. Okay, good. Anyone's with me? Yeah? Okay, so now we get to the Mordechai.
We're going to go to Mincha, I guess.
Yeah, we'll have Liad, you could do a special Mincha for us?
No, that's kind of normal.
I like special Mincha.
We'll figure it out when we get to it. We gotta get to the Mordechai and the Ketuvim to us quickly. So
it's like a whole chabura in itself.
Well,
Mordecai didn't see was
in. Think so?
Yeah.
Let's talk about it. Mostly we've been talking about stuff that we've talked about. Let's get into some of the new material. So, very important. Mordecai, Avram, you want to tell us about the Mordecai? I'm picking on you today because I saw your chazar and fear neither. It's okay, there is a neither related makar. You see the neither related makar? So the Mordechai is worried about the following case. The Mordechai is worried about Zorik Matvea Shel Chaver Liyam Potter. So if I throw your coin into the sea, I'm not liable to compensate you for the cost that you're going to have to expend on hiring a diver to take it out for you. Alright, so Mordechai is like, gee, why is that? Seems kind of strange. So first the Mordechai says that this is true even if you hold Dina Degar Meir Potter. And he quotes Yesh Cholkim that Koyim Sarvei Yachir, if you're Zorik Matvei Shachavei Liyan, etc. Koyim Sarvei Meir, you would be Chayiv. Right, so it's machlokas whether you'd be chayiv for Dina Degar Meir in this case. So then the Mordechai asks, well, according to this position of according to this position of Rabbeinu Yochar, that a mayor holds you to be chayiv for causing the guy to expend money on a diver, why is that different from ripui bivehema, which you're putter from paying? All right, so if I cause you to expend money to recover the coin that I threw into the sea, I'm liable to compensate you. But if I harm your animal and cause you to expend doctor's bills to heal it, I'm putter from paying you. So what's the difference between the cases? Right? He says, one of them is a case where I'm garamo lahaskir schirim lahaloso. And same thing with ripoy. Right? So you should be chayiv for ripoy behema because you're also goreim for him to expend money to heal the animal.
That is putter.
What?
Isn't he putter?
Isn't who putter?
The person who threw that.
So that's the first view that he quotes.
Okay.
Then Rabbeinu Yochar thinks that according to Rabbeinu Yochai,
okay,
in the view that you're chayiv, why is it you're chayiv for the matveya, but not chayiv for the ripoy of behema? Right? My shnal Rameir mehamaka behema skaver the mishalim nezek about ripoy in a mishalim. Achal gav the goram alikin the rope. So, what do you think his answer is?
What happened? Rabbi
Meir
doesn't think
that. Yeah, so what does he think?
He says it says actually Rabbi Yakir said that Rabbi Meir wouldn't actually agree with the Rabbanim.
I mean, that's his raya against him. I mean, that's his raya, that's the Mordechai's raya against Rabbi Yakir.
Yeah. So what were you asking? Were you not asking
that? Yeah.
Okay.
So then the Mordechai says,
it is clearly against the whole analysis. The question,
yeah, because assuming if there's no Tashlume Ripoy, right? Yeah. The Mordechai at this point is the Bar Kukta, who thinks that you're not going to be liable for Ripoy and Sheves for Behemoth. We'll see why in a second. So the Mordechai says, well, what's the difference? Why is it that you're liable for Sheves and Ripoy to Adam, but not for Sheves and Ripoy to Behemoth? So he gives this answer, very difficult answer. Selder, what's his answer?
That's the difference between Dina Degar when it comes to Niskei Mammon versus Dina Degar when it comes to Niskei Guf.
Yeah. So he says, he thinks that, so two assumptions here. He says he thinks that Sheves and Ripoy are kind of Dina Degar Mi, and just that there's a rule that you're liable for Dina Degar Mi Begufa Adam, but not the Mamono. Okay? I'm actually not 100% sure that he says that, but that it seems to be what he's saying. So here's his formulation. So when I cause you harm such that you have to spend money on medical bills, that's as if I'm mazik your mamon. She'al karcho yeshlo litein l'rofe. Because you have to spend money on the doctor bill. Mishum hachi chayev l'shalem ripui levad min hanezek de'af chesei mikaspe. Aval kishemazek l'mamono u'machmas oso mamon mafsid mamon acher kegon chovo behemas behema u'machmas ha-behema hifsid mamon acher sheyesh alitim l'rofe zehu grama de'lad begufohu el b'mamono mishum hachi pater. So I think, how do you make sense of this distinction? I think he's saying two separate things. Leah.
It seems like he's saying that the costs incurred to help are removed, so there's some form of grama or garmi. But if it's one step removed and it's directly on the person, then that's still
to human health is grama and garmi, you think?
I think he's saying that in any way. Mm-hmm. It's like it's one step removed. If you cause a loss through requiring someone to pay for a doctor or financial needs. But if it's one step removed only, and it's on the person, then we say down the dungeon of the dharma of time. It's one that's further than that. It's not even on your coat, but it's on your mama. And it's so far removed that at that point you no longer say your time.
Yeah.
It's in proximity to the person.
Right? Yeah, good. So I think he's saying two things. I think Leah's pointing out the second thing. Mazik l'mamono, u'machmas oso mamon, mafsid mamon acher. So the idea is that, like, if I harm your animal, so I'm mazik your mamon, and now, like, the harm to your mamon causes further monetary loss through the doctor debts that you incur. Right? So, I'm liable for being mazik mamon. I'm not liable for being mazik mamon, which in turn generates nezek mamon. What?
How does that distinct from the first?
How does it distinct from the Adam case?
Yeah.
Ah. So you might think, well, she's saying in the Adam case, a mazik gufcha, which generates a mamon loss. Right? That's one way of making sense of this.
Is there really much of a difference?
Well, he says, right, because it's la gufo, el mamon, that's what he's trying to say here. So were it to be the case that I caused you physical injury, which then causes a monetary loss, that's like what Leah's calling one degree removal. But if a mazik mamon, which then causes further monetary loss, it's 2 degree removal.
Yeah, I would say, especially depending on how you understand why grama or garmi should be considered, if the idea behind grama is somehow established.
How removed?
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is totally sour.
Right, okay.
How removed?
Good. Except that I would respond to that by saying, when you care about grama in general, we care about, like, physical degrees of removal, or, like, degrees of temporal removal, right? In this, like, spatio-temporal sense. Not in this kind of abstract conceptual sense, right? So it's like, here it's about conceptual, like, was I mazik mamon, which was mazik mamon, or was I mazik guf, which then was mazik mamon, right? Because they both seem to be as removed from the tortfeasor, from the mazik. The only difference in the case is that one of them is like mamon to mamon, and one is gufo to mamon. So it's not clear to me that conceptual distinction is sufficient to knock it down to mere grama. So that's the first issue that I have. The second issue is that it's not at all clear to me that the Mordechai is right in conceptualizing this as a case of mazik gufo, mazik mamon, which in turn is mazik further mamon. You might say that I'm mazik mamoncha in two ways. I'm mazik through material loss, and I'm also mazik you through causing you to expend doctor's bills. It's not as if loss to mamon A generates a loss to mamon B. I do one action, which causes both the loss of A and the loss of B. So I'm not sure that the causal process here that the Mordechai sets up is the right way of conceptualizing what's happening. Isaac. Good. So that's the second. That's the second point I was saying that the Mordechai is making, different from the point that Leah was pointing out. Leah was pointing out what seems to be a distinction between a guf to mamon and mamon to mamon, which is that degrees of removal. And I think that's definitely here in the Mordechai. That's the second half. But I think the Mordechai is also making this point. She'al karchof yesh lo litein l'rofe. It's like, when you suffer a physical injury to your body, it's like you must spend the money to heal yourself. That's the point you're making, Isaac?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so what does that mean? First of all, what kind of duty is that? Is that like a duty of to keep yourself in good health in a shmartan mode on Afshah Seichem or something? Or?
This is a Gemara on like design. Talks about that it's to a certain extent shows of Eda.
To be master somebody's good health.
Someone's health is shows of Eda. So, like, in terms of that regard, there seems to be some kind of injunction, positive injunction, maybe, that
leads
to my health.
Yeah.
So, maybe that's what we're saying here is that it's not that, like, I decide about my animal feel better. It's like, no, Hashem wants me to feel better.
Yourself,
and
right.
And therefore, it's not just like, you know, action A causes action B. It's no, action A necessitates action B. And therefore, it's as if he struck my mind.
Right. In a goof case.
Right.
And so the point is, the Eibishter doesn't care about your cow.
Right.
Contra tevya and like fiddler on the roof, right? He's always asking for a bracha for his cow. The Rosh Hashanah doesn't care about the cow, right? And so if a cow suffers injuries, so like leave it suffer, put a bullet in its head, and just collect the market difference.
Right.
So if you want to recover the cost of healing, that's like your own, that's the nizak's like volitional choice. But in the case of chavala, where you sustain this kind of injury, you have like a duty to repair yourself, and so that's considered directly related to the mazik's action. So maybe that's a way of trying to bridge. So then it's not really true, this thing about mammon causing mammon loss versus guf causing mammon. It's not about degrees of removal. It's not about that. It's not about the conceptual disruption between guf and mammon, mammon's mammon. It's really about whether there's a duty to do the repair. Right? So like, mashal ma'adav ardomeh, were it to be the case that the Ribbono Shel Olam cared about your cow, and you had a duty to repair it, then it wouldn't be grum on that case. Right, that's what you're saying.
It would be the duty to repair it. It's like, be simpler. Like, people, when they're deciding to repair their behemoth, they're just factoring on the count of, like, is it worth it or not, or should I get a new one? But like yourself, you don't decide, like, is it worth it to heal me, or like, should I just get a new one?
People decide that all the time, no?
No.
Someone breaks their nose, and they say, I'm not a bachur anymore, so, doesn't matter if I
right?
No, people make decisions all the time. Do I need the? It's cosmetic. What?
All the time.
All the time, people make decisions. No.
All the time.
You don't think so? I mean, somebody sustains like a kind of an injury if they're a sports player. Yeah. This is what we were talking about, right? Eitan's a buffer, right? He's rolling out the dough for his physicians. His dermatologist is working hard on him.
And we're privileged.
But the point is that, like, you know, some people care, some people don't care, and it just people make those decisions for themselves as well. No?
I think people spend like not like market based considerations like on themselves for like repairs. Like they're not like deciding like, oh, like is it financially worth it for me to like repair this injury that I have?
He must come from like an upper class neighborhood.
You don't think that people that don't have the option to heal themselves make that decision.
Yeah, okay, but there you go. So there you go. So what?
If you don't have the option to heal yourself, you can't do it. Even though people could heal themselves, they would do it even if it wasn't financially smart. Yeah, clearly it is coming from an upper class perspective to say that you heal yourself even if you don't need to financially.
If somebody's going to pay you money to heal yourself, you know you're going to do it. Or at least, in which case, you're both fine.
You think so?
Yeah.
Well, no. The question is why is the mazik liable for your repoy bills? And his answer is that
if you can't get a new, like I said, you can't get a new person. You can't like get a new. You can't just like replace it.
But suppose it's not the kind of thing you need to replace.
My car. I get a new car. I get the Mazdaq damage of the car, and then trade in the current car and get a new car.
But there's only one you. So that's like a general presumption that you'll always look to heal yourself or something.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's amazing. I mean, like, whether or not, if you decide not to, then you're both out, which is fine. That's your prerogative.
Yeah.
But on the magic, there's responsibility to
Sure. Okay, I think we should stop here and just wrap up the Nesivos, the Kedushin Nesivos and Chazanish on Monday. So mostly, we'll wrap this up on Monday at the very beginning of Chabura. I want to point out, so I added some Mekoros on the Mishar and Bishishim, the Sugyas and Akonis. If you're learning Akonis now on the Kol, this is great, so you could just cover the material here. I'm going to add some more stuff. But this is mostly what I want to cover on Monday. I mean, we're going to spend some time on the Nesivos and the Chazanish, some interesting stuff there. But then I want to get to the how are Misharim, like a Peros, Agav, Asada, and those considerations. That'll wrap up Tashlumei Nezikin, and then we'll just keep going from Daf Testament Beis back into the Shaka Vitara.
Right?
That's right. That's right. Okay, good. So we'll dominate finish.